Most of you know, I grew up here in Portland, and I remember as a little girl meeting people experiencing homelessness at my very own breakfast table, because that's the kind of mother that my woman that my mother was. Back then, most of the people who were surviving outside were huddled in only a handful of areas throughout the city, one of which was the Pearl District, before it was called the Pearl District, when it was just rail yards and warehouses. But today, people who don't have access to stable housing are surviving on the streets, in cars, and in living rooms, just like my mom's, in virtually every neighborhood in the city. Ending people's homelessness has always been my highest priority. It's an issue that resonates with me and should resonate with everyone in our community, because no one should have to carry the anxiety and fear of not knowing where they're going to sleep tonight or whether it will be safe to sleep at all. Everyone has a story. Every single person that you see surviving outside has a story that they can tell. The kind that I heard around our breakfast table and the kind that drives me and hopefully all of us to do this work. Unfortunately, the way that homelessness is talked about often strips away people's stories, making it harder to recognize and acknowledge not just the full humanity of those who are surviving without a home, but also the true urgency of this challenge. If you haven't yet, I recommend reading the most recent Multnomah County Domicile Unknown report. The deaths of Tisha, Terry, and Michelle, people whose stories are shared in the report, are tragic in their own right, but there's even further tragedy in knowing that their deaths may have been preventable if they hadn't been living outside. Reading through their stories, we can pinpoint almost exactly where and when housing and our supportive services like treatment, mental health counseling, reentry, and peer support could have prevented their homelessness, eased their struggles, and even potentially avoided their deaths. Homelessness is preventable, and we should never accept that it's a foregone conclusion. As my dear friend Israel Bayer says, homelessness isn't normal, and we shouldn't begin to normalize it. We have come a long way over the last 10 years. We have built a system that has ending people's homelessness at its core. And for the first time ever in our community, we are going to be able to scale up this system that we know has worked to end thousands of people's homelessness. And I'm hoping that the housing that people are connected to and the services that will help them stay in it will allow more and more people to tell their own stories of hope and stability instead of the stories of loss that we've had to tell instead. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Kafouri. I'll go ahead and do as the agenda says and tell a little story myself. For me, I'll think back to the recent storm, the winter storm. And I was able to see Commissioner Jayapal there, meet Mark Jolin live in person for the first time. Just a reminder of how odd it is to be onboarded during COVID, that you don't actually get to see people live. But on the five consecutive mornings I went there, I was able to see one person several times and then another person a couple times. And so we struck up conversations. And what was I was struck by with both of them, one was African-American, one was white. I'd say they're both over 45, I'll just say to be safe. They all talked about wanting to work. They all talked about how their lives would be better if they could function to have a job. And having a safe place to sleep every night would give them that opportunity. But it was more the hunger that I heard from them about wanting to have a job. They also were really grateful that the shelters were open, because they basically said they don't know if they would have survived that intense winter storm without the shelters being open. And that's an opportunity for me to say thank you to the joint office staff and all the partners, including fire and rescue and others across the both jurisdictions that made that weekend, you know, planning. I mean, there was so much planning that went on during COVID, and you just saw it all come together. And Mark Jolin and your team just really hit it out of the park. And I'm really grateful to see the results of how we took care of our houseless community during that winter storm. So that's my most recent story. And then for me, it's also the reminder that the best thing that's happened in my life is that I have two nieces that I didn't know very well. And they're my brother Tim's daughters. And Tim passed away on the streets 8 years ago. And it definitely was a motivation for me to want to serve in this capacity. And seeing those two men reminded me of my brother and knowing that how important it is to have that infrastructure and having that resilience, having housing, having a resilience plan to build some economy of scale for themselves, and then mental health and addiction services. Like it's that complexity that we're managing. Anyway, so it's really great to be here with all of you. And I'm gonna turn it over to Jian Kim, who agreed to be our facilitator today to keep us focused and also keep us on time. And thank you for being here at the end of a long work day and being on yet another Zoom call. The time will go fast, and I'll turn it over to you, Jian.
Thank you, Commissioner. And thank you, Mayor, Chair, and Commissioners for the privilege of facilitating this important conversation. For the record, my name is Jian Kim, and I'm a Strategic Project Manager for the Office of Management and Finance. And since we're gonna spend the next hour and a half together, I thought I would tell you a few things about my background and my connection to this work. Before I moved to Portland in 2019, I lived in Seattle for 23 years. And my first foray into addressing the homeless crisis and issues around housing affordability and displacement dates back to 2001. I spent 7 years managing affordable housing, including transitional housing. And more recently in 2017, I was appointed to help coordinate the mayor's team to address the homeless crisis in Seattle. And as part of that work, I performed over 300 site visits to urban campsites and across the city, and I conducted outreach with hundreds of individuals who lived unsheltered. And really on a personal note, I've had immediate family members who have been in and out of the shelter system, and I truly understand the barriers that individuals face while they're trying to stabilize their lives after being houseless. And all of this is to really say is that I can so appreciate how difficult this work is. And I really have such a great affection for those who are doing this work within the city and at the county, who I've gotten to work with over the past year as part of the CARES funding. And so I'm gonna share my screen now. We're gonna get into our presentation. I hope you guys can see that. You can't see the screen?
Not yet.
You can't see it yet.
Hold on.
Now we're seeing the screen.
Okay, great. So let's see. I have what we usually call the icebreaker, right? So before we get into the meat of the discussion, I just want to get our imagination flowing and start with an opening roundtable question. The question I'm posing is it's really easy, name one thing you would like to see improve as part of in our homeless response strategy. And this could be operational, it could be an approach that needs to change, or it can even be about external things. But I just wanted to start this conversation focused on us thinking forward. And so Commissioner Ryan, I'm gonna start with you since you're one of our conveners, and after that, we'll go to the chair.
Okay, one thing that could improve, create more space for this, what we're doing right at the moment, a joint session between the two bodies. We need that collective thinking and the bold leadership and focus now more than ever, because it's the number one issue facing the city, the county, and the region. And so I hope that this isn't an annual event, but it's more like quarterly, because I think the community needs to see us all connecting with one another, wrestling with our number one issue facing our region.
Secretary?
I'm sorry, could you repeat the question again?
Yeah, just name one thing that you'd like to see improve in our homeless response strategy.
I'm really looking forward to the new dollars coming in, and I'm looking forward to being able to ramp up really quickly, and I think it's going to be a challenge. So I would hope that people will be compassionate while we're doing that.
Okay, Mayor Wheeler.
I would say improved access to mental health and substance abuse.
Okay. Commissioner Jayapal. Oh, you're on mute.
Of course I am. So to add something new to the conversation, I'll say a better feedback loop on our efficacy in all of the strategies that we're pursuing.
That's great. Let's see, Commissioner Hardesty.
A commitment to serving the people who live on our street because today it feels like we're committed to permanent affordable housing with services, but the people on our streets can't wait for us to build enough housing, have enough services, have enough service providers, and we must do better for the people that are living on the street today. And those that will join them when the moratorium expires.
Commissioner Myron.
Thank you. Mine actually echoes Commissioner Hardesty's, but really having a harm reduction approach that lessens the trauma and public health and health challenges and safety challenges for the people living on our streets right now as we're working toward longer term solutions.
Commissioner Maps.
Thank you for this question. I would like to reduce the number of people who sleep on our streets every night and do that on a monthly basis moving forward. Just kind of get on that glide path.
Commissioner Peterson.
Oh, that's me, Vega Peterson. I would love to see better coordination with the private sector. I think we have a lot of energy and ideas on how to address this problem. We know it's the issue that people are most concerned about in our region. And I think that getting as many voices to the table, and especially people who have been impacted in their own way and might have innovative ways for approaching the problem, and making sure we have communication paths for that to happen is really important.
Okay, and Commissioner Rubio?
I would say better regional coordination, especially with new resources coming into the area so that the service and support for community members who are experiencing houselessness is felt as seamless and not constantly facing disruption so that we're re-traumatizing folks.
And then Commissioner Stegman.
Well, going last, I would say all of the above, and I would like to see the ideology of meritocracy fall away, and the idea that people can just pull themselves up by their bootstraps, or that they have to earn a right to have housing. That is not the approach that I think that we should be taking. But more importantly, it is a community issue. And if we don't get community members on board with our values, it's going to be challenging to make the changes that we need. So really just trying to encourage more humanity. And frankly, everybody deserves housing. You don't have to earn it.
Wow, that is an impressive list. And I say yes, yes, yes to all of the above as well. So thank you for that. Okay, so let's get into it. We're just gonna keep rolling through our agenda. This is our agenda for the evening. Our objectives tonight are really to get an update from Mark about the state of houselessness in our city, in our county, gain a better understanding of our current services between jurisdiction. And lastly, we'll talk more about what the opportunities are in terms of collaboration and some areas that we'd like to talk about in terms of investment. And just to set the stage for our conversation tonight, you know, we really just want to create some ground rules. We want to focus on key issues or questions rather than answers. Recognize differences in experience, acknowledge it in each of these topics, and direct areas of creative tension and disagreement to staff for further analysis. And for the last one, I want to keep the conversation moving. So if I see us getting stuck on a conversation or a topic, or if we're behind in time, I just might interrupt and just say, like, let's just have this conversation at another table, because you know we only have an hour and a half. And you know, I really see this work session is about deepening our engagement with each other. And so, Mark, I apologize ahead of time if I call time if we're running behind. So, and then one last important thing is that, you know, our friends at the county attorney's office want to remind us that budget law prohibits discussion of next year's budget. So we'll not be able to discuss program offers pertaining to the Metro Housing Bond or services measure. So we have a lot of information coming your way. And Mark, I'm going to hand it off to you now. So I'm going to stop sharing the screen.
All right. Well, I will start by expressing my appreciation for all of you coming and allowing us to do this, to engage this conversation. As I hear the requests for things that we can do more of and do differently, it aligns so well with, I think, the opportunities that we have before us related to the Metro measure and some of the expanded resources there. So I was glad to hear all of those things. And then I will go ahead. We have about 20 minutes of just information to share with you. We know we have a number of new city council members, so there's some sort of grounding in the history of the joint office that we thought it would be good to provide, but we'll make sure that we're holding space for the intended conversations here. And give me one moment to, all right. So I think it's important before we start talking about the joint office and the work we've done to address the homelessness crisis over the past 4 years that we ground ourselves in why, even though we've ended homelessness for thousands more people over that period of time, we continue to see so much need on our streets and in our shelters. The joint office was launched in 2016 at a time when the situation facing our most vulnerable populations was already bad. And in the intervening years, it has either not improved or gotten worse. There was already an affordability crisis, and that crisis persists and grows, especially for extremely low-income households. The gap between rents and the resources that our lowest-income households could afford was already large, but it has gotten precipitously worse. As a state, we ranked in the bottom 20% in terms of the level of unmet need for mental health services, and today we are second to last and last for the adult population. And we faced and continue to face dramatic racial disparities across our institutions, including in education, healthcare, employment, criminal justice, and housing. All of these factors have continued to push growing numbers of our most vulnerable neighbors into homelessness and have increased the barriers to escaping homelessness for those who are already on our streets. Just one illustration of this. I think we skipped ahead several slides there. Yeah, thanks. Just one illustration of this trend over the life of the joint office is the dramatically increasing gap between what someone on federal long-term disability has in terms of income, which you see on the lower line here, and fair market rents, which you see for one-bedroom apartments on the top line. Not surprisingly, this dramatic increase correlates with the increase in chronic homelessness in our community. The hard truth is that someone with a serious long-term disabling condition would have had a much easier time managing those challenges and staying housed 10 or 15 years ago. Now it's virtually impossible to do so without significant help. The pressures driving people into homelessness are not just in Multnomah County, they are regional. And going back a few years, there were already an estimated 107,000 households at risk of homelessness on any given night. The joint office doesn't directly control those forces putting people at risk, causing them to lose their homes. And yet the community rightly looks to us to help those households recover. But until, as a larger community, we can control that inflow upstream, we will continue to struggle to meet the need. For every person we help into shelter, into housing, too many people continue to fall into homelessness, taking their place. And last year with COVID has only exacerbated the pressures. Tens of thousands of new households are falling behind on their rent. If 35% of households were behind on their rent this fall, that would be 50,000 households in Multnomah County alone. The Joint Office has been doing this work in the face of tremendous headwinds for the past four, almost 5 years, pushing to help as many people as possible escape homelessness. But in no sense have we been doing it alone. The Joint Office was created out of the vision of a home for everyone, the initiative that launched in 2015 with a commitment to break down the silos that once divided us, uniting people from across jurisdictions and stakeholder communities together around a single table to align resources and to do everything in our collective power to end homelessness in our community. The partners in A Home for Everyone, including the city and the county, united behind a vision that everyone should have access to safe, stable, and affordable housing, and a commitment to a shared set of values, including the pursuit of racial justice in the homeless service system. That's why from the outset, there was a commitment to bring a racial equity lens to everything that the initiative does and to the Joint Office. The creation of a lead agency to overcome those silos in homeless services, in particular between the city and the county, was one of the early priorities of the Executive Committee of A Home for Everyone. For too long, the city and the county had fragmented a system that needed to be internally aligned so that it could focus on building collaborations with other key systems like health, employment, criminal justice, et cetera. What you see here is a graphic representation of how the Joint Office is governed under the Intergovernmental Agreement. Funds flow from the city and county and policy direction as well. However, that policy direction is mediated through A Home for Everyone and the hundreds of community voices that are part of that structure. The office also has a standing policy committee comprised of leadership from Portland Housing Bureau and Department of County Human Services and representatives of the elected offices that the Joint Office reports to, now Commissioner Ryan and Commissioner Kafoury. This is a more complex governance structure than most government offices, but it's also more rooted in community voice than any other office I'm aware of because of the commitment to seek ongoing guidance from scores of individuals, including significant numbers of people of color, culturally specific organizations, and people with lived experience who are part of A Home for Everyone. These community voices shape all aspects of our work, our planning work. We support all the planning within A Home for Everyone, and we do have a plan. And there are, in fact, several of them, many you've helped us craft. Over the last 4 years, we've led the work to create a plan to expand permanent supportive housing and a plan to address chronic homelessness. That work is one of the reasons voters approved the Metro Supportive Housing Services measure, and since we've created the local implementation plan for those funds that we'll talk about. In addition, we've developed and implemented multiple system improvement strategies over time, including for shelter, coordinated access, severe weather, and over the past year, COVID-19. We're also a contracting entity. It's one of our core functions. As you'll hear more about in a moment, more than 90% of our budget is devoted directly to paying the community-based organizations we contract with to deliver a continuum of services to different populations experiencing homelessness and houselessness. We're the HUD lead agency, so we're the lead agency for HUD continuum of care dollars in this community. It's about $26 million a year that comes into Multnomah County through HUD, mostly for rapid rehousing and permanent supportive housing services. And then we oversee publicly funded shelter development and programming, including year-round severe weather and COVID-19 shelter. And going forward, we'll be Multnomah County's lead in implementing the Metro Supportive Housing Services MIP. So those are some of our core functions. I'm really excited to be joined today by Joshua Bates, who is our equity manager in the Joint Office. I've asked him to join us today to share a little bit about some of the specific ways in which we organize the work that we support in the community and also our operations in the Joint Office. Joshua, I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you, Mark, and good evening, commissioners, mayor, and chair. Thank you for allowing me the space to discuss our office and our community's work. So this is an overview of our community systems of care. As you can see, we have the family system, the youth system, the DVSA system, the adult system, and the veteran system. And those are the different functions of the systems. On the right side of this slide, you'll also see all the different organizations that comprise our systems of care. The work that we do at the Joint Office of Homeless Services is primarily a partnership with our contracted providers that is organized through these five different systems. Over 90% of investment, as Mark said, and the Joint Office is contracted to our nonprofit community. And aside from COVID-19, we have not historically or traditionally been in the direct service, done direct service work. We fund organizations through these different systems. But throughout all of these different systems, there's also a focus on racial equity. The systems are built with a recognition and primacy on the importance of culturally specific and culturally responsive services. Each system has providers facilitating street outreach, engagement, offering shelter services, and each system is designed to help people gain and retain housing. We fund the crucial services and additional supports, health services and income acquisition needed to help the, with housing access and retention across our systems. And finally, our systems and our providers ensure that individuals and households experiencing homelessness are identified, assessed, receive the emergency services that they need and the supports they need to access housing and retain housing. And all the while, across all these different systems, the focus is on the individual and those individual needs that, that families and individuals have. As a joint office staff person recently said in a visioning session, folks that see the person living on the street, but they don't see the 10, 15, 20 people who we have kept in their houses. At the same visioning session, another person said that we fundamentally believe that housing is a human right. And behind every contract, every meeting, and every initiative that we implement across these systems in our office, there is a human that works tirelessly to see an end to homelessness. Can we go to the next slide, please? There is one slide that it may be missing. Can we go back one? There we go. That double click, it gets you sometimes. So next we're gonna talk about the equity work that our office has been facilitating with a focus on the internal equity work. All of the work that the joint office does across the systems is relayed through our office, and our office matches the priorities that we have set forth by through A Home for Everyone, specifically in regards to promoting racial justice. Some people in our community have asked this question of whether this work on racial justice, this focus on eliminating racial disparities, is in opposition to our imperative of ending homelessness. And the answer is that they're actually one and the same. The work on racial equity is the work in ending homelessness. Staff feedback renders this also not solve the broader issue of homelessness alone without addressing the root causes of poverty and especially racism. And all of this work of racial equity starts within the walls of the joint office. Our commitment to racial equity in how services are being delivered means that there has to be a commitment to racial equity in our own work. And we have incorporated racial equity throughout our internal operations as an office with the goals of hiring and retaining individuals from racially diverse backgrounds, and also in terms of creating an organization that incorporates racial equity into all process and policy considerations. We consider equity in all of the steps of hiring, from the job posting to outreach to interview questions to the composition of the interview panel. And as you can see on the right side of this slide, people of color, individuals of color are represented at all levels of our office. This also occurs in the onboarding, where we really hammer home this point that racism is a primary driver of homelessness. And to end homelessness, we must also end racial disparities in homelessness. It also occurs in the support that we have in our office that we build into our office. We have an affinity group structure that wrestles with the most pressing issues impacting our work and our employees. And then finally, we have an equity steering team. And this equity steering team drives organizational change by facilitating things such as trainings, work sessions, and really I am figuring out how to wrestle with some of these large issues around equity. So as I said, like our staff has been a huge part of all of this work. Another staff person said that the joint office works daily on diversity, equity, inclusion in every single thing that we do. And so thank you very much for your time. I'm going to go back to Mark real quick.
Thank you, Joshua. So now I want to just take a few minutes to talk about some of the progress we've made under the various plans that we talked about earlier. I'm going to start with where we have to start right now, which is COVID-19. It's been almost exactly a year since we joined forces with emergency management, the health department, our community-based organization, and scores of others to initiate an all-hands response to the COVID-19 pandemic and the threat that it poses to people experiencing homelessness and facing the risk of homelessness. At this point, I want to recognize the incredible work of the staff of the Joint Office. Those who were here at the beginning of the pandemic have not only worked tirelessly to keep the safety net intact, supporting our providers as they struggled to stay in operation. Many have taken new assignments in the COVID response, building new programs, working in shelters, delivering supplies. And I want to recognize the hundreds of people we hired temporarily this year to work in physical distancing shelters, as well as all the county staff who took assignments in those shelters, as well as a lot of city staff. All told, more than 600 people mobilized to support the COVID-19 sheltering efforts that are still underway in our community today. Among the elements that you see on this slide are the 6 new high-risk motel shelters, the 2 critical voluntary isolation motels that we created for people who are COVID positive, the congregate physical distancing shelters, and the C-3PO outdoor physical distancing shelters that we've been able to assist the city with. Those all contributed to ensuring that we did not lose any shelter capacity as a result of the pandemic. And in fact, with the help of our emergency management teams, the city bureaus, county departments, our community-based organizations, we found ways to expand it. We also were partners with PHB and the Housing Authority and County Human Services in getting $29 million in rent assistance out to over 5,800 households at the end of last year. Over 80% of those dollars went to people who identified as BIPOC, and we distributed thousands of gift cards to people in shelter and who are unsheltered. You can also see here the tens of thousands of pieces of survival gear, PPE, water, and food that we've distributed from our supply center, working with scores of contractors and mutual aid organizations on a comprehensive outreach strategy to keep those who are unsheltered as safe as possible during the pandemic. In part because of these tireless efforts by so many people, we've not seen large outbreaks of COVID-19 in our shelters or encampments, and we are extremely excited to be beginning the vaccination of people experiencing homelessness in partnership with the health department and our community-based organizations. I'm now gonna hand it back to Josh to talk a bit about the overall progress under the Home for Everyone plan. Josh.
Thank you, Mark. So as y'all saw earlier, a Home for Everyone's plan in homelessness seems pretty complex. It's comprised of so many different stakeholders, and it's such a all-encompassing initiative. But it is also actually pretty simple. We reduce homelessness in two ways, by reducing the number of people who become homeless, or by increasing the number of people who escape homelessness during any period of time. And shelter doesn't end anyone's homelessness. It has an important role to play in keeping people safe while they lack permanent housing, and as stability that facilitates successful transitions to permanent housing, but it doesn't actually end anyone's homelessness. Shelter would work even better in our community if people had more homes waiting for them at the other end of their stays. Here you can see the evolution of our budget and how we have invested our funding in housing placement and retention, permanent supportive housing strategies that get people into housing and keep them there, and also in shelter. And as we've done so, we've seen the kind of increases you'd expect to see. Can we go to the next slide? Thank you. So we also have progressively increased our investment in safety off the streets, rapid rehousing, and supportive housing to achieve the objectives of a home for everyone, while also centering the needs to eliminate racial disparities. As you can see on this slide, the total folks served and retained has increased substantially over time, from almost 9,000 to now over 12,000. And throughout the evolution of all of this work, we have also increased the amount of BIPOC individuals served from 54% to 62.7%, a number which is greater than their representation of both in our greater community and also in homelessness. Can we go to the next slide, please? Thank you. It looked very similar to the previous slide, so I want to make sure it actually changed. This trend, thank you.
Could I ask a process question? Gwen, would you like us to wait until the end of the presentation to ask the question where we're going to have our roundtable, or is it okay to ask the question now?
I think for time's sake, let's wait until after the presentation and we'll ask questions afterwards.
Okay. Is there a number on this slide? 21.
21.
All right. Got it. Thank you.
Thank you for the question, Commissioner Hardesty. So this trend of, as I was saying, this trend of expansion and diversification also is present in our work in homelessness prevention. The amount of individuals served in prevention has nearly doubled since 2015, from 4,840 individuals served to 8,590 individuals served. Additionally, this work continues to prioritize communities of color, with almost 72.6% of households and individuals served identifying as being from communities of color. So thank you for your time. I'm now going to go pass it back over to Mark.
And Mark, I told you I was going to be a keep time. And so we have about 3 minutes. We can go maybe a little bit, 5 minutes for the rest of the slides, if that's okay. I just want to make sure that there's enough time for conversation.
Yeah, no, I think we're on track. So we want to talk briefly about shelter and a little bit about permanent supportive housing, but we'll move quickly. So as Joss said, the Home for Everyone plan is in part about reducing inflow. It's in part about increasing the number of people who move out of homelessness. And it's also about shelter. We went into a Home for Everyone committed to expanding shelter, but also to listening to folks with lived experience about what they need to see in shelter. So we've increased capacity, but we've also increased the types of shelter available and eliminated a lot of the barriers that kept people out of shelter or made shelter less effective at helping them move successfully into permanent housing. In the last 5 years, we've doubled the shelter capacity. We've talked about that before. We've taken the overnight shelters in temporary buildings and a system that was concentrated almost entirely in the central city and transformed it. Our new shelters are purpose-designed, housing-focused, low-barrier, located in community. Community-based shelters near the places where people want to be are an essential best practice. Losing your home shouldn't mean losing your community. And we have also added alternative shelters into our continuum of care. We've transformed the family shelter system into one where all families have an individual room instead of relying on congregate space. And the transformation is underway, but not complete. So additional pieces are coming online this year with the new site on Lombard, the alternative shelter RFPQ that's out, and new motels that we've acquired or are working to acquire. The next couple of slides we can move through very quickly. Here's where we were in 2015 in terms of publicly funded shelter capacity. The next slide shows you where we are today. You can see a larger number of locations and a much richer geographic diversification of those sites. And the final slide just is an illustration of really the quality of the kind of shelter environments we've been able to create, including village type shelters, the new family shelter, and the navigation center are there. And then finally, I'm just going to say a few words about PSH planning, which has been such a critical part of our work over the last several years. It's been a partnership with the Housing Bureau and Home Forward. At the direction of the Home for Everyone Executive Committee in 2017, we launched the process of creating a PSH plan that both City Council and the County Board adopted in 2018 to add 2,000 units of supportive housing over a decade. The plan and the progress we're making towards it was part of the bedrock for the Metro measure and the funding that will transform permanent supportive housing in our region. This next slide will be quick. You all know that, I think we jumped ahead one. So permanent supportive housing really is that deeply affordable housing for folks who are extremely low income, making 30% of area median income or less. And it comes with wraparound support service, tenancy support services, behavioral health services, the services that they need on site and in the community that help them stay housed over the long term. It is the most cost-effective and effective solution to chronic homelessness in our community. We've been doing, now we can move to the next slide, progressive work over the time of the joint office. And you can see here a pretty significant increase in the number of total people who are served now in permanent supportive housing as compared to then. And we are on the verge, thanks to the Metro measure, the city, the Portland Housing Bond, the Metro Bond, really accelerating our progress around permanent supportive housing expansion. Next slide. In the coming year, we're going to see 200 new units come online just through the Portland Housing Bond partnerships and hundreds more using vouchers created by the Metro measure. These will go to people with severe and persistent mental illness, to very vulnerable people on coordinated access, and to the most vulnerable people in our COVID shelter programs. An example of this work, and an example that it isn't theoretical or a long ways away, is a program that will open this summer called Cedar Commons. Not only is it tangible evidence of our work paying off, it's also exactly the kind of partnership we've got to continue to build. Cedar Commons joins the Housing Bureau, the Joint Office, Home Forward, the County Health Department, and Central City Concern, and it'll create 40 PSH units with 10 dedicated to some of the Behavioral Health Division's highest need participants. A second example is our mobile PSH team, mobile permanent supportive housing team, which we expect to expand significantly. And it combines the expertise of multiple agencies, including culturally specific organizations, peer support organizations, to tailor a unique package of support services to households in scattered site supportive housing around the community. And then finally, the Metro measure holds the promise of not only delivering on the commitment to expand PSH by 2,000 units that we originally identified, but to exceed that goal in Multnomah County and to vastly exceed it regionally and to invest strategically where the greatest unmet need is here and throughout the region. So with that, I will turn it back to Jim.
Thank you. Commissioner Hardis, you had a question.
Thank you, Jen. Yes, I was struck by the percentage of quote unquote people of color. And I'm really interested in the disaggregated data because the disaggregated data would lead me to ask questions around with African Americans and Latinx population. Can we make the argument that there's a direct line from incarceration to living on the street? Can we make a direct line about untreated mental health issues? So I guess for me, I don't know enough about those people. The numbers just sound big, but it doesn't give me information about where did those people come from and how did they end up living on the street. So I think being able to have some real data about are these folks coming back from state prison who, you know, are supposed to find housing and alcohol and drug treatment and mental health treatment and end up on our street. Joshua, do you have that data, or is that data that is available?
Yes, we do have the disaggregated data for each of those years. I'm not sure if we do actually have the, I'd actually defer to Mark in regards to like the tracing where the folks are coming from. Like, do we have that data, Mark?
We do at a fairly high level in terms of as people enter our system, we know what their last place of where they came from housing. Did they come from an institution? I don't think we could generate which specific institutions people came from. That said, there's a lot of collaborative work happening to get up to the doors of the hospitals, up to the doors of the criminal justice system, and to do diversion work. It's one of those key areas with the Metro measure as well, where we have this opportunity to attach resources to folks before they wind up on the streets. And the thing that in the slide that you saw, Commissioner, that everyone in that group had in common is that they were experiencing homelessness at the time that our providers met them. So they were outside in shelter and they moved out of that situation back into housing and are stable there now. And that is absolutely, Josh is right. We can disaggregate that by each community's show, and we can bring it to the city budget presentation exactly how different communities are faring in that housing placement and retention process.
I think that would be very useful. And very quickly, the next question is, I'm always concerned when we talk about culturally specific organization, knowing that we don't have enough culturally specific organizations for the needs that we have in our community. And so are we limiting opportunities for people who are desperate for services because of the capacity issues at culturally specific organizations?
Do you want to take that, Joshua, and maybe speak to the plans around the Metro measure?
And I'll just add, like, let's be brief and let's move on to the agenda. And then we can also follow up. So go ahead, Josh.
So I'll try to keep this brief, although brevity is not always my strong suit. We with the Metro Supportive Housing Services measure and the implementation of that, there's a focus on first off, culturally specific organizations, and then also the expansion of our systems in regards to culturally specific organizations that are not currently represented in our systems. And that includes technical assistance and working with where folks are at. So we can definitely talk about that more, but I think that my time is up.
You know what this tells me? If we go back to Commissioner Ryan's areas of improvement, which is having more conversations, and this group feels like we're just touching the surface on deepening our understanding of what the data is and how we're approaching this body of work. But all right, we're going to go into a quick exercise. But first, I am going to share the slide, which my colleagues called an oil spill, but I'm sharing it for one reason. It's actually not an oil spill. It's the Rio Negro, which is a river that's almost black in color, and that's on the left. And the sandy colored part of it is the Rio Solimões. And because of the composition and the temperature of the water, it flows side by side for 6 kilometers without mixing. And then when it actually does mix, it becomes the Amazon River. And so this is what I think about when I think about the city and the county working together. We're working side by side. And then when we merge together, we create something just incredible, something that's greater. And that's how I see this body of work. And this is how I see this body of work moving forward. And so now we're gonna go into kind of an interactive exercise. And Mark Bond will be my partner in crime here, which is we're asking the question. First, we're gonna ask it to the county. What are the continuum of services or programs that the city provides as part of our current regional homeless response? And then we'll ask that same question to the city. And so this is kind of like a pop quiz because Mark has just gone through a lot of the services that the joint office provides and the county. And so let's see if we have our memory retention hats on. Let's see. So Mark, I'm gonna share the Jamboard. And so I'm gonna start with you. Let's see, Mark, can we see the Jamboard? I think we can.
Yes, we can.
Okay, great. So
we're all in one big room and here's our whiteboard.
It's our big whiteboard, yeah. Digital whiteboard. So Chair Kofuri, I'm asking you the question of what does the city do in terms of providing services as part of this continuum of services for homelessness?
Oh gosh, I'm on their own category, or not in the joint office, not through the joint
office? Oh, just the city.
Well, I would say that
to answer about the county, not the city, right?
We're asking the county to answer for the city, and then we'll come back around.
Got it.
We're testing our knowledge of what each other, what we do for each other.
Okay.
Oh, this is where I get to comment on the city. Ha ha, Commissioner Hardesty. No, I would say the Housing Bureau and the supportive housing that they build and that is crucial to the continuum of services.
Is that all you think we do, huh?
Well, I didn't realize that I had to do all of them. I thought we were going to, definitely.
One at a time, she did great.
Do we need to is it like team county versus team city? And we're getting into little.
I was trying to be nice and leave my colleagues, Portland Fire Bureau. I was gonna shout out the Fire Bureau.
Why don't we go to Commissioner Stegman or Vega Peterson or, why don't on the county side, let's popcorn it of what does the city do as part of the homeless response? Hucker.
Trash cleanup.
Portland Street response.
And the C3PO and some of the independent outdoor shelters that they run.
I think those are run by the joint office now.
Anyone else?
Did you get trash pickup in there? Or is that part of HACARP?
HACARP.
All right, City Council, did they get it right? Are they missing anything?
And, I would add public safety. Whether or not they should be, the reality is that PPB is responding and is part of the response, whether we want them to be or not.
Mark, you're doing a great job. All right, City Council, did they get it right? Are they missing anything?
All right, veterans, Wheeler and Hardesty, you guys.
Let me just say that, as you know, there are self-managed camps and there are non-self-managed camps. And I believe that the city has some role, especially in the self-managed camps, the city, but I don't know what the relationship is with the joint office. And I will say that for the camps that just pop up, they are certainly camps that the city has to address in some way, shape or form.
I would add on the preventative side through the Housing Bureau low-income housing. We are in the supportive housing market. I think that's most, never mind, because that's really joint office through the city and the county.
And we're also building affordable housing, right, through state law, right, that allows tax breaks. What do we call that? The multi program allows us to add to very slowly the stock of affordable housing.
Although I don't think you would ever think of parks as
we didn't put the the Portland Housing Bureau in there, did we? Unless I missed.
Yeah, it was one of the first ones, I think.
That was mine. I said that back when.
So, can you hear me? I'm going to say something. Yeah. Okay, but I think parks would say that they're involved in houselessness, whether they want to be or not. They are, and so they do a lot of work every morning. Basically trying to get the parks set up for the public right away and usage. And I'll never forget a meeting I had in my first month with bureau directors from areas of the city that you never would expect for them to speak to the fact that they're inundated with a lot of services towards the houselessness residents, and parks was one of them.
Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, water, sewer, they said that they are often busy with doing work with our houses residents as well.
Mark Jolin, you look like you want to say something.
Can I add one?
Sure.
So PBOT has folks specifically deployed to work with people who are sleeping in their vehicles.
Well, we're going to go down that road. The Portland Police Bureau also has a homeless facilitator in the Portland Police Bureau as well.
And I'm going to bring.
I think she left, but I don't. Do they? They have a new one, but PPB, yeah, should be in there.
Yeah, that was already mentioned, right?
Yeah, I mentioned, but it wasn't. I don't see it there.
I'm going to break my rule and as facilitator, and I will just say, because of the St. John shelter, I'll say that BDS, with their facilitation of the permit, also did an amazing job. So, but that's cheating. So I'm going to now pose this question to the city. You guys had a little bit of a run through with Mark, because he had listed a bunch of work. So let's start listing the things that the county contributes as part. Well, there's the joint office, and then there's the county. So why don't we popcorn around? And I'm going to start with you, Commissioner Mapps.
Sure. Well, mental health services, I think, must play an important role here. Human services also.
Commissioner Rubio?
Youth and family services, support services, SUN and food pantry through SUN, ranch assistance.
All right, we'll give Mark a minute to catch up here. And while Mark's catching up, we'll go to Commissioner Hardesty next. We're also doing the joint office as well. So, all right, Commissioner Hardesty.
Commissioner Hardesty she's having some connectivity issues.
Okay. Well, since you're on, Mayor.
Am I doing county and joint office?
We can do both. Yeah, let's do both.
Rent assistance, transitional housing, shelter, permanent supportive housing, emergency hotel vouchers, mental health, substance abuse, public health services. What am I forgetting? I'm probably emergency shelter. A winter emergency shelter. That's all I can think of right now, but I'm sure I'm missing like 20.
You do. Oh.
That's a lot of sticky notes.
Yeah. How about public health? You know, the clinics.
Partnership.
And with behavioral health or addiction services, is that included in mental health? I know that should be there.
Commissioner
Behavioral Health Addiction Services Recovery.
Sorry, Dan. Commissioner Hardesty is going to try and call in also, so if somebody could monitor for that.
Okay.
I have a question. Is the mayor considered a ringer because he was a former county chair? Like, does he get extra points for that role?
Yes.
Exactly. I think he shouldn't be able to. That's kind of cheating.
Right. That's also hard when you're on his team because it's like that game show where like he did all the Family Feud answers and like there was like nothing. It was really hard to come up with one. Yeah.
Strike the mayor's answers from the board. Let's see, who haven't we called on here? With the exception of Commissioner Hardesty, I think we went through all of our. So county commissioners, chair, what's missing from this picture?
The sheriff's office, like the HOPE team. There's project, I guess under mental health services, it's Project Respond, Behavioral Health Outreach, DCJ, the Department of Community Justice has a whole bunch of programs. Within public health, there's, the questions of, you can break it down so much. There's syringe exchange, outbreaks, human waste, those kinds of things.
Yeah, we missed hygiene stations as part of the city response, I think.
And neighborhood, what about the neighborhoods? A lot of the neighborhood associations also are involved in that. So office of whatever that office is called with y'all.
Commissioner Hardesty's back on via phone, apparently.
Okay. Commissioner Hardesty, you're missing the our JAM board, which is, we're talking about the work that both the city and the county does. And we have just gone through the exercise of going through the city articulating what the county does, and the county is now filling in the gaps. And so please feel free to weigh in, Commissioner Hardesty. Yeah.
Thank you.
So, one thing that I would add, if county commissioners can add something, is the prevention services that the Department of County Human Services provides.
And I love seeing Mark's smile on his face because he has something to say. Mark, Joellen, go ahead. Oh, you're on mute.
Okay, I would, on the county side, the only aging, disability, and veteran services, there are numerous overlaps with our work and participant population.
Communicable disease services. Dealing with outbreaks.
All right. So, as we can see with this exercise, like there are things that we know the county does, and there are things that we know that the city does, but sometimes we don't know all of the things that we're doing. And I think, at some juncture, we should actually map it out so we understand the full continuum of services that are being provided and how really core, like I said, going back to that river, we're both doing things and sometimes we're not quite sure what the other person is doing, but we are going to merge together. Hopefully not 6 kilometers down the road, but sooner than that, that we're really deepening our understanding over the next several months to really get a better understanding and have deeper conversations with each other about how we can do better and where are the areas that we are really succeeding and recognizing those as well. So thank you for going through this exercise. I'm gonna pass it along to Mark now.
Okay. All right. So we just have a few slides to talk about where we're headed. And then I think there's another opportunity for everyone to weigh in. So the first 5 years of the joint office have positioned us pretty well for the next decade. The partnerships that we've been able to forge with our community partners, with our government partners, both inside the county and across jurisdictions, give us a foundation to build on. We have a tremendously passionate and dedicated team working in the joint office, as you heard from Joshua. And we know that with the Metro measure, we have an enormous opportunity to build on the foundation and move thousands of additional households, many of them experiencing chronic homelessness on our streets tonight, into housing. It really is an opportunity to build on the work that we've done over the last 5 years to get ready for this. Looking at the Metro measure, the hallmark of the measure, beyond committing to reducing racial disparities in homelessness and putting a focus on those experiencing chronic homelessness, is that it offers a highly flexible resource that we can use to leverage other resources and make strategic investments in the supports that will maximize our progress toward ending homelessness in this county and in the region. The ideas for how to do this will come from those most impacted as we focus on community-driven solutions, and they'll be regional, setting us on a path for a truly regional response to the homelessness crisis. I want to offer Joshua a moment to talk about the LIP that was recently approved by the Metro Oversight Committee, and offer my thanks to Council for the input that you gave to us during the course of that process. Joshua, do you want to jump in?
Yeah, sure thing. And thank you for the input that, as Mark said, the input that we received in regards to the LIP. So as many of you know, we conducted an extensive community engagement process with the intent of creating a local implementation plan that truly represented the urgent needs that our community is experiencing with homelessness, and also with an emphasis on centering the voices of communities of color and people that are currently experiencing or have experienced homelessness. And through that, that process, we facilitated conversations with over 70 stakeholder groups, ranging from peer support organizations to recovery service providers, to culturally specific organizations, neighborhood associations, business groups, and racial and ethnic affinity spaces. And in each facilitation, we developed questions through the use of a racial equity lens and facilitated conversations that center the needs of communities of color and those with lived experience of homelessness. And also, beyond all of those different discussions, to ensure that we heard the voices of people currently experiencing literal homelessness, we worked with HREC out of PSU and Street Roots to interview almost 400 currently homeless individuals. And then we created a memo out of all of those interviews and incorporated that into our local implementation plan. Finally, there was a general survey where we received feedback from 578 people from across our network. So really, we were engaging with folks in so many different methods, and also responding to trying to do as much community engagement as we possibly could, while also reckoning with the realities of COVID-19. And throughout the entire process of generating this local implementation plan, we worked with the coordinating board of A Home for Everyone, who was approved to be the advisory body for our LIP generation, to both provide feedback on drafts of the plan and also to recommend different items to incorporate into the plan. The coordinating board of A Home for Everyone, as many of y'all know, is a racially and ethnically diverse group of community leaders. Community engagement and racial equity was a core consideration throughout the entire process of generating the local implementation plan. And the essence of all of that is reflected in the plan. The plan investments are focused on providing stable housing and ending racial disparities in rates of chronic and episodic homelessness. And this imperative of community engagement is going to continue on in all of the work that we do in regards to the Metro Supportive Housing Services Program. So thank you so much for your time. Back to you, Mark.
And this is the last piece that we wanted to share, and then turn it back over to you for discussion. The impacts of this measure, as much as we've done really tremendous work in this community responding to the crisis over the years, this is a transformative opportunity for us. We have the ability with this measure to make good on our commitment to ending racial disparities in homelessness. We have an opportunity to significantly scale and better integrate behavioral health response into the homelessness crisis, those resources into the homeless response system. We have an amazing opportunity to expand regionally the supply of permanent supportive housing. The goal is at least 5,000 units across the region. And at the same time, to put thousands of additional people who are experiencing a risk of episodic homelessness in stable housing with the supports that they need to be successful as well. In the near term, we have an opportunity with these resources to expand our emergency response, including in the areas of outreach and alternative shelter capacity. And in the long run, and I want to end here, this measure and the commitments in it and that we've made in the local implementation plan allows us to design and implement a truly regional response to the homelessness crisis. And I think that that is where the real opportunity lies here as we look forward across the coming years. So thank you all for your time and attention. And we're happy to take questions, but I also know that Jen has another round robin exercise planned, I think.
Mark, could I ask a question? I'm sorry, Commissioner Myron has her hand raised. I'll raise my hand and go after her.
Sure. Jen, do you? Commissioner Myron.
Thank you. Yep, the usual. I just had a question in terms of, having as the outcomes the, ending chronic homelessness or decreasing it substantially. And I understand that ending racial disparities in rates of chronic homelessness, and that's and I'm not sure if that's said that way for a specific reason. We do need to decrease the racial disparity, but that can happen in ways that don't actually mean the outcomes are better. You can reduce racial disparities by making things kind of worse for, like, I'm wondering if just there's a way to convey ending the racial disparities that, I'll stop talking, but I do feel that the goal I'd interpreted as decreasing chronic homelessness, and I just would like to have that described there. Curious what my colleagues think.
Yeah. Mayor, did you have a question?
I do, but Commissioner Hardesty has one on the phone, so why don't we take her question first, and then I'll go after her, if that's all right.
Great.
Commissioner Hardesty, can you hear us?
Sorry, I was on mute. My apologies. I started by saying I agree with Commissioner Marin, and I think the question that she was asking is our priority is actually providing housing for chronically houseless people. And if we are prioritizing based on our chronically houseless people, then of course we will have more people that are Black, Latinx, and Indigenous. So I do think that we, which is why I asked for more data around that. So just to support Commissioner Marin in that question. But my question had more to do with very specifically, our planning was all around a pre-pandemic approach to trying to solve our housing crisis. And I'm not hearing anything about how we've adapted to the new reality of what will happen when the eviction moratorium ends. And so my question to the county is, the city is looking for land that we can utilize as our houses population explodes. And I want to know who I talked to at the county to find out about county-owned land that we could utilize for temporary housing assistance for our houseless community members. Thank you, Mayor.
Before we answer that question, Commissioner Hardesty, this is a work session in itself. So I respectfully, you know, just in the interest of time, would like to table this question for another, perhaps a work session in the future where we're talking about how we're addressing, how we're working together to address that the issue that you just articulated.
I'm happy to follow up with Commissioner Hardesty. I'm happy to follow up with you about this and talk to you about the RFP that's out on the street.
Thank you.
Jan, okay. can I briefly address the Commissioner Meyer and Commissioner Hardesty's first question? So absolutely, that this measure allows us to significantly decrease the number of people experiencing chronic homelessness. I think that the overlay around reducing racial disparities means that we start in that effort by trying to reduce chronic homelessness among those communities of color that are so overrepresented in that population, right? So that it says, yes, our goal is to reduce chronic homelessness overall. And within that, we know we have communities of color significantly overrepresented. We need strategies and investment priorities that address that level of overrepresentation, right? So that's why we focus on building out culturally specific organizational capacity and the wider range of behavioral health services that are culturally specific, because we recognize that we're actually seeing some of the fastest rates of growth in chronic homelessness among certain communities of color. And we have the highest rates of chronic homelessness of any community within the Native community. So that's what we mean there. It is within the framework of reducing overall chronic homelessness and episodic that we really focus our strategies on grappling with the overrepresentation of communities of color.
Again, like this also could be another work session where we're diving deep in the data pieces of it, because there have been a lot of threads about what data do we have and how are we tracking that data. So Mayor, briefly your question and let's move on to the next.
My question's brief and it's probably gonna require a larger answer at a later date, but I just wanted to know, since Mark was talking about the regional housing services measure, I'm curious to know how does the city get involved in that decision-making process, or where are we in that decision-making process about the allocation of resources?
I think that's part of the budget conversation, so I'm not sure if we can talk about that. Am I correct with that? And then, is that correct, Mark? We're not gonna talk about future program offers, right?
Yeah, the executive budget comes out on April 23rd, 26th.
I'm really just asking about process. Is there a table or is there a process where the city is included in discussion around the allocation of those resources?
This is a great segue into our next conversation piece, which is just going in the round table of, can you see my screen? Let's see. So how do we improve collaboration with our responsive governments, within our responsive governments and across jurisdiction? And the mayor alluded to, you know, this desire to get more involved in the discussions around allocation of resources. But I'm gonna go around robin and perhaps we're gonna collect these items of improvement and have other conversations, because clearly, you know, an hour and a half is just scratching the surface. So I'm going to start with you, Commissioner Ryan. You know, what are your ideas in terms of improving collaboration within the city and, you know, across jurisdictions?
This is something that just actually I figured out today, and it was actually late this afternoon even. And it's of how to reconvene the Policy and Budget Alignment Committee, which I just recently found out about in the joint office and the intergovernment agreement. And from what I understand, it can help play a key role in increasing our budget and policy coordination. And from what I understand, it just hasn't been meeting for a while. And so those tuning in, you know, we're onboarding into jobs and it is COVID. So things are maybe not as smooth as we'd like, but I do think that coordination of that alignment committee needs to be rebirthed. So that would be something I need to focus on.
Yeah, Thank you, Commissioner. You know, if people have feedback on some of these, you know, these areas, opportunity to improve or collaborate, let's just put those in the comments. And then I'm going to go to the chair next in terms of areas where you'd like to see improvement and collaboration.
Sorry, I couldn't find that. Couldn't find the mute button. I think that we do have a table set up for having cross-jurisdictional collaboration, and that's the Home for Everyone table. And I think that gives us an opportunity to meet not only at the big table, which is the coordinating board, but also we have an executive committee, which is made up of members of both jurisdictions. I think that there's even a larger question here, which is something that is I'm really looking forward to with the Here Together ballot measure, which is cross-jurisdictional or beyond our county borders. We know that people move frequently between jurisdictions, and having kind of an artificial boundary set up just by a county or a city is really an outdated way of thinking. So I am super appreciative that we're going to be moving forward in a tri-county way, both individually as counties and then overarching through Metro.
Okay, I can pop in and say there's a lot of tables, and those tables don't necessarily talk to each other. And so it's just really very complicated to just say that there are tables of collaboration, because no table knows what the other table is doing, basically.
Let's see, why don't we go to Commissioner Rubio?
Well, I think for me, in order to answer this question, I need some more learning. And I would love to know also what is working so that I can better understand then where the gaps are as well. So I commit to learning and having conversations offline so that I'm in a better place to engage on this question specifically.
Thank you. Commissioner Stegman.
Thank you. I did have something I wanted to say is that we've been having a lot of conversations with our East County jurisdictions, and thank Chair Kafoury for leading many of those conversations. And through those, we've discovered that our East County cities would like to be at the table and be more involved with Home for Everyone. So the cities of Fairview, Troutdale, and Wood Village currently do not have a representative. And so I would respectfully request of this group that we consider giving them a voice at a Home for Everyone table. Gresham already has a seat, which is great. But as you all know, East County and our multiple cities are very diverse and have different needs and ideas. And our East County Homeless Council, which has been led by our Multnomah County Sheriff's Office, is already formed. So it's already kind of occurring organically, but as has been mentioned, is that sometimes we operate in silos, and I think it's important for there to be a linkage between that group and a Home for Everyone, and I think that that would benefit our entire region greatly. And of course, I'm happy to, you know, roll up my sleeves and help coordinate that in any way, but I think it would be really beneficial to have all of the cities at the table.
Okay, Commissioner Mapps.
Thank you very much. I'm interested in two pieces. I think it would be helpful for the city and the county to sit down and clarify what our responsibilities are. You know, where is the city the primary lead? Where is the county the primary lead? And where do we work together via the joint office? And the other piece that I'd like to see us pursue through conversation is to develop joint goals, something like budget metrics that both the city can embrace for the joint office and the county can embrace for the joint office, so that we can kind of every year as we invest in this program, we can kind of take a look at the end of the year, did we get to where we want to go?
Thank you. Commissioner Vega Peterson.
So I think one thing that came up from the previous exercise is that there's a whole lot of areas of each of our jurisdictional governments that are working on the issue of houselessness that are totally outside the joint office. And I think that as we think about the solutions for people experiencing homelessness, we have to think broader than maybe what's just it contained in the joint office and do a better job of finding how we can do more collaboration between the two governments. And I, Commissioner Mapps, I think this is what your idea was getting to when, in your discussion. So I really appreciated what you had to say. But you know, I think when we think about how this is affecting all of our community members in so many different ways, we do have to think broader than just the joint office and putting all the onus on the joint office and really thinking about how we can activate all of our different parts of the different governments to work better together in addressing this issue.
Commissioner Myron.
Thank you. So I think I'll echo a lot of what's been said. And I think, you know, we are fortunate. We do have the A Home for Everyone table. And I think that there are a lot of groups that are left out of that table. So it doesn't feel like there's, you know, pardon my Lord of the Rings reference, but one table to rule them all. So there are all these different tables, and I feel like I know about some of them. Some are the city, some are the county, some are behavioral health, some are housing, some are businesses, there's neighborhood groups, you know, Mark goes to all of them. No matter where I go, Mark is there. But, you know, the East County table, we need a place that all of this actually meaningfully comes together so that there is sort of ownership and accountability with that one specific place that is a hub that everyone knows that's where the information is filtered and heads there. So that's what I would say.
Commissioner Hardesty.
Yeah, I would say that we have to be much more transparent in where we're investing resources, both the joint office, the county, and the city, because all of us are spending like tens of millions of dollars, and there's really no way to determine whether or not we are funding the same thing. And I go back to culturally specific, because I think about the number of organizations that fit that definition. And I know that we don't have enough mental health providers or social service providers or anybody in any group that would actually be able to meet the capacity needs. And I am very concerned that we keep funding the same people, but not actually increasing the capacity for folks to provide those services. So for me, much more transparency about where we're investing our dollars so that we know that we're having an impact. And let me just say about the other tables, when we are the people who are the elected officials and we don't know what's happening at tables, those are not effective tables to get the work done. So I just wanna put a note in that.
Thank you. Commissioner Jayapal.
Thank you, Jan. So I had similar thoughts to the last two sets of comments, Commissioner Myron's and Commissioner Hardesty's, and one has to do with the Home for Everyone table, both in terms of whether everyone who needs to be at that table is there, which I think is the point that Commissioner Myron was making, but also to better connect that table and what's happening there with our two bodies, with the Board of Commission, the City Commissioners and the County Commissioners. What I don't see happening, you know, Mark, you had a slide that set out policy and where policy was flowing, and it was flowing from county departments to Home for Everyone and from our respective boards to a Home for Everyone. I don't really see that happening because, you know, not being on the executive committee, I don't have a way to feed into the policy discussion there, nor do I hear what's happening at that table. So I'm not suggesting a solution. I'm identifying a gap that I see, but that's one of the gaps that I see. And then as I said, the question of who is at that table and how to better organize county-city collaborative tables, and then this whole set of community tables that we have and figuring out how better to get those community pieces of community engaged and involved and really plug them in, use their ideas and their talent and their effort in a more effective way.
Mayor, I've given you the last word.
Well, I can never take just one word, you know me. I really like everything everybody just said. So I'd say in terms of improved collaboration, make sure that we are in agreement on the definition and the scope of the problem, and that we are consistent in terms of what our objectives are, and that we are consistent and transparent in terms of how we communicate with the public what it is we are actually doing, where we are going, and what we've accomplished. And then I'm going to throw in a freebie since I got the last word. In terms of collaboration, we need to work together as effectively as we can to get the state to step up, particularly on mental health and substance abuse supports. The county cannot do it all on its own.
Thank you, Mayor. So I'm going to transition. I mean, we are at 7 o'clock, but we have one more item if everyone has time for it, which is just another popcorn session of like, name one takeaway from this joint session, and then also name one commitment to advance our joint efforts. And so I'm going to give the chair the first word on this one, and just answer these two questions.
I don't want to do this wrong. I'm supposed to answer both of these questions?
Yes, but briefly.
Can we have the questions back again?
Sorry. Can you see them? Hold on.
Yes.
Okay.
How about I'm just going to answer the second question, which is name one commitment to advance our joint response efforts. And I'm going to say that I'm very much looking forward to having the public conversation that at least at the county that we'll be able to start in April once my budget comes out, to talk about all the new investments that are going to be coming from the Here Together ballot measure, because I think it gives us an opportunity to do a lot of the things I've just heard, which Commissioner Hardesty talked about building culturally specific organizations. That's going to be key to actually achieving the goals that we've set out. That is going to be, we can talk about that more in the coming months. And then the other issue that I heard a lot of people talking about is transparency with the community. And we haven't had the dollars to actually do glossy brochures or bus benches or whatever we need to do to get the word out through a communications team. We have one lovely person. So I think having the ability to be more transparent and more open with the public about where their dollars are being spent, because we're going to be able to funding dedicated to that, as well as building the capacity in our culturally specific organization. So that's two commitments that I have that I'm very much looking forward to. Thank you.
That's great. And if somebody has to jump off, I'll let you go answer these questions. If everyone can stick around, let's hang on for another 7 minutes. So if there's anyone that needs to press off, Commissioner Myron had to leave for another panel. So let's go to you, Commissioner Hardesty.
My one takeaway is that as the elected leaders, we don't know a lot about what's happening at tables and who are making decisions about investing our dollars. One commitment that I'll advance with our joint effort is to start stalking Chair Kafoury so I can find out what lands the county owns that we could partner in making available for our houseless people.
Oh gosh, Commissioner Stegman had to leave as well. So thank you, Commissioner. And I think Commissioner Jayapal also had to leave. Oh goodness. So let's see. Let's go to Commissioner Rubio. We'll go to Commissioner Vega-Peterson and then Commissioner Mapps.
So I have learned that I very much am interested in learning more deeply what the county and the city are doing and how the work that we're doing in our bureaus intersects with this work and what we can bring to bear in the future in future discussions.
Commissioner Vega Peterson.
Thank you. I'm really committed to finding ways that we can, like I said earlier, use all the work that's happening across our jurisdictions to really address this issue. And I would say I'm committed to meeting regularly with my counterparts, but I think we already have those meetings set up. So I'm looking forward to continuing this conversation.
Commissioner Mapps.
Sure, and I think one of my takeaways today is that given the new resources that are coming into the joint office, I think it's very important that we come up with clear plans and clear goals for how we are gonna spend these new dollars. And one of my commitments that I'm ready to make tonight is that my office will be a constructive and engaged partner with the county as we have those conversations about what our goals for chronic houselessness are and how we go about meeting those goals.
Let's go to you, Mayor. And then Commissioner Ryan, why don't you go next and you can wrap us all up.
Sure, just in terms of a commitment to advance our joint response efforts, I commit that even though I've asked Commissioner Ryan to be the commissioner in charge of our relationship with the Joint Office of Homeless Services, I intend as mayor to stay highly engaged in all of this along with my team. And my big takeaway from this joint session is that there's a lot of intellectual curiosity amongst the players here. And I think we are all craving being on the same page with regard to our goals and where we are headed and how we are going to get things done. And we have this great opportunity with the Metro Services bond to really move in some new and exciting directions together.
Commissioner Ryan, take us home.
Sure. I want to say that my big takeaway was the sticky jam board, and especially on the county side, being educated on how many divisions are actively engaged in our houseless community. And the commitment is actually to reconvene the Policy and Budget Alignment Committee to make sure that gets up and running and really help us move towards the next intergovernment agreement between the county and the city that needs to be signed in 18 months. I think it's a really great time to do a restart. And I'll just say that this is an all-in effort and response. I get to hang out in this space because of the wonderful assignment. And but I know that it's about all of us working together. So I really do hope that we can push for more frequent gatherings where we can drill deeper into a specific topic. Thank you, Gian, you kept us as focused as possible, but I look forward to more joint sessions where we can dive deeper and get more top of mind thinking. The community is there, they want us to do this. And so we have to meet them with their urgency, with all of us being in bodies like this, having this in rooms like this, having this kind of dialogue. So I hope this is the start of something that's more frequent.
Well, I wanna thank everyone for their time this evening. And I will say definitely, like, what I heard was a lot more alignment on what is needed and a lot more like curiosity in terms of digging down deep into the data pieces of what our strategies are. And I know, like I say this to the joint office all the time, which is, you know, your success is my success, or and the county success is the city's success. And I truly do believe that moving forward that we can just deepen these relationships. But I think with all that, we are adjourned. So thank you everyone for your time.
Thank you for facilitating. We appreciate
it. Thanks, Jen. Good night, everyone. It's been a
good night, everyone.
Thanks, Jen.
Breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Yeah.